Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More at dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, December the 7th. Well, we got some more snow overnight in central and southern Wisconsin. We're certainly getting our exercise shoveling snow this week, aren't we? Another 2 to 4 inches fell in Madison, Milwaukee, and surrounding areas. We'll get a glimpse of the weekend forecast in just a few minutes. This hour, we're going to talk about the energy bill that passed in the House of Representatives yesterday, but faces a filibuster in the Senate and a threatened veto from President Bush. The Senate takes the bill up this morning. And we will wonder if you want this legislation, which would increase fuel efficiency standards for our vehicles for the first time in 3 decades, among other things. Well, our guest certainly does. He'll tell us why, and he'll answer your questions and respond to your views at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, please use 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Daniel Weiss. He is Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy at the Center for American Progress. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So this energy bill that passed in the House is a good one as far as you're concerned?
Absolutely. This bill will launch the clean energy revolution in the United States. It will dramatically increase fuel economy by motor vehicles. It will spur the development of clean renewable fuels. It will require much more renewable electricity made from the wind or the sun, and will dramatically increase efficiency by buildings and appliances.
Yeah. What does it do with the fuel economy or fuel efficiency standards?
By 2020, it would require cars and light trucks to average 35 miles per gallon. Right now, combined, they're averaging about 22 miles per gallon.
Yeah, this is the first boost in this for 30 years. What's been the holdup on this?
The increase in fuel economy standards has been opposed by auto companies and their allies who sit in very powerful positions. This has been the first time that Congress has increased fuel economy standards since the age of the 8-track player in 1975. So this is quite an accomplishment, and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi deserves great credit for moving this through the House.
Yeah. You mentioned it also does more on renewable energy. How so?
It includes what's called a renewable electricity standard that would require utilities to generate 15% of their electricity from wind, solar, geothermal, or other renewable energy resources by 2020. And if this were to take effect, it would save consumers billions of dollars in lower heating and electricity bills, and also remove enough carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. It would be like removing 13 million cars from the road.
Yeah. But Republicans are complaining about this bill, saying that these actions could lead to higher energy prices and do little to produce more domestic oil or natural gas.
The independent studies have found that that's not the case. In addition, opponents of the bill are very concerned because the bill also closes $13 billion in tax loopholes that were given to big oil companies over the last couple years. And just to put that figure in perspective, since 2001, the big five oil companies have made $500 billion in profit. And the $13 billion in tax loopholes that would be closed over 10 years is about the same amount that four of the big five oil companies have made in profits just in this year alone. So in other words, this is a drop in the barrel for oil company profits, and the money would be used to invest in helping people buy cleaner cars. It would invest in clean energy like wind and solar, and it would invest in research into cleaner renewable fuels. So we're taking a tiny bit of money from the oil companies that they've made over the last 6 years and investing in clean energy. And there's some senators that object to that.
Yeah. Well, now the Senate, it takes this up, but I'm reading here a filibuster is expected. You expect that?
Yes, we expect the opponents of the bill in the Senate to try and block consideration of the bill. There will be a vote about 9:25 Eastern time. I believe that both Senators Cole and Feingold are going to support consideration of the bill and oppose the filibuster. That's a good thing. But it's going to be led by predominantly Republican senators who object to closing the tax loopholes for big oil.
Yeah. We're talking about the energy bill that passed in the House yesterday. The legislation, among other things, will require our automobiles to achieve 35 miles per gallon by the year 2020, the first proposed increase in fuel efficiency standards for vehicles in the past 30 years. Do you support this bill or not? As we heard, many Senate Republicans do not. There will likely be a filibuster on the bill in the Senate. The president has also threatened to veto it. Which way do you want it? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Dan Weiss, Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy at the Center for American Progress. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 17 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Friday, December the 7th. Be sure to stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Lots of interesting talk all day long. This afternoon, after 4 o'clock, John Munson in for Ben Marins, and it's your views on the news after 4. John and his guest political scientist will take your calls on the top news stories of the week. We will have our week in review after 8 o'clock this morning with two guests from different perspectives, talking about the most significant political news stories of the week. We're talking about one of those stories right now. The House yesterday passing the first increase in federal automobile fuel efficiency requirements in 3 decades. The legislation would require the auto industry to boost fuel economy 40% to an average of 35 miles per gallon within 13 years. We are talking with a guest this hour who likes this development and likes this energy bill that the Senate is scheduled to take up this morning, and we wonder if you do too or not. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. To the phones we go. Jerry in Oconomowoc is first. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, this is Jerry from Oconomowoc, and I'm wondering if the guest that you have understands how things work in the state of Wisconsin when the emissions are actually getting pushed onto us, that we have to have our cars pass emissions.
Jerry, I think you got to turn your radio off and just talk into the telephone.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, yeah, I'm wondering what he has to say about who's going to incur the cost of renovating all of our vehicles to be more mile per gallon efficient. I'm thinking, like emissions happened, I expended $700 a couple different times on older vehicles to get them to pass, and once I expended a certain amount of money, they allowed me to go ahead and pass them without passing them, okay, pass or fail. But this looks to me like another spot where I'm going to have to open up my billfold and crack open and pay a lot more money down the road to make my car more efficient as far as miles per gallon.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
All right. Does that have anything to do with Jerry's cars, Daniel?
Under this program, the cars will be made more fuel efficient using existing technologies. You won't have to get it inspected to determine if you have better fuel economy. The caller's right in that the initial outlay for your car will be anywhere from $500 to $1,000 more. However, you'll save anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 over the life of the car in lower gasoline costs. For example, if the standards that were passed yesterday were already fully in effect today, the average car would have saved $420 on lower gas prices this year alone. So although you have an initial layout, you're going to save a lot of money in the long run in lower gas costs.
Yeah, I guess I don't get it, Dan. So if I have a car that doesn't get 35 miles a gallon, it's an older car, I have to do something to increase the fuel efficiency of my old car?
Not at all. This would only apply to new cars, and it would be phased in. So if you buy a car in 2015, it's not going to get average 35 miles per gallon. It's that all the cars in 2020 we'll have to average that.
Yeah, and so if I go buy a new car on the lot or whatever at that time, the car might cost some more because of this technology.
That's correct, right. But it's not going to affect existing cars.
Yeah. Jerry, does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Randy in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. What a great show.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
30 years ago, when I first joined the Army, I had a Honda Civic that got in the high 30 miles per gallon in the city, and it got in the high 40 miles per gallon on the highway. So this is 30-year-old technology. This is not mind-boggling technology. I don't understand why there's all the fight from the Republicans mainly to fight this. I just don't understand it. And I get, you know, the CAFE standards and, you know, the new cars are going to be held to that. I'm all in favor of it. But I just don't understand why there is such a fight from that side about increasing the CAFE standard.
Do you understand it, Dan Weiss?
I think it's because the auto companies make much more profit from bigger fuel-efficient cars compared to smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. Second, they didn't want to spend the money on the fuel economy technology because they think that cuts in their profits. And, you know, it's easier for them to do things like, for example, the new Lexus has a device on it that can measure your body temperature if you're sitting in the back seat and adjust the heating airflow accordingly. You know, that's where their research has been put into how many cup holders they can fit on a car, what size the cup holder should be, and other conveniences that have nothing to do with the performance of the car. Meanwhile, there's off-the-shelf technology that can meet these standards today. It's possible to build an SUV that meets the 35 miles per gallon standard with existing technology.
Yeah. What does this bill do in terms of, I don't know, ethanol and flex fuels and that sort of thing?
Excellent question. Mm. This bill would mandate the production of 35 million gallons of ethanol, but what's interesting is it invests in the next generation of ethanol. Almost all the ethanol that we have today is made from corn, mm-hmm. and that is better than using oil, but it's not that energy efficient. There's research being done trying to commercialize what's called cellulosic ethanol, ethanol that's made from other plant matter, whether it's switchgrass or agricultural waste or other low-energy plant matter. And the bill would provide incentives and eventually require a certain amount of ethanol produced from what's called advanced biofuels. Now, this bill also gives the auto companies credit for building what you just mentioned was called a flexible fuel vehicle. Mm-hmm. That's a car that can run on either gasoline or on 85% ethanol. But here's the problem right now is that although there's about 4.5 million flex fuel vehicles on the car in the U.S. on the road in the U.S., there's only about 1,200 service stations that actually sell E85. So nearly all the flex fuel vehicles just use regular gasoline. Now Wisconsin's a little bit fortunate because you have 92 public service stations that sell E85, and you've got about 116,000 flex fuel cars in your state. That's not bad. But in California, for example, where they have 250,000 flex fuel cars, they have one station in the entire state that publicly sells E85. New York State has two stations. So
yeah, that's not very many.
Right.
I presume we might have more of those because we do the corn ethanol thing, though.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, your next door neighbor, Minnesota, has almost a quarter of all stations that sell E85 in the entire country. Now, one of the things the bill does is it provides incentives for service stations owners to put in E85 pumps. In addition, one of the reasons why the fuel is hard to buy is that oil companies have been prohibiting some of their franchisees from selling the fuel. And this bill includes a provision that says to the oil companies, no, if franchisees want to sell E85, you can't restrict it.
Thanks to Randy. Ron in Waukesha is next. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, a couple questions. One, I don't want to be the guy that spoils all the fun, but it sounds to me like, are you any type of a mechanic? Do you know anything about what all this does to the vehicles? You're talking a whole bunch of stuff. It sounds like you're reading off a piece of paper, a bunch of really good numbers. But get somebody in a truck, get somebody in an SUV, 35 miles a gallon. Are you going to pull a trailer down the road with that? They're not doing that. Is ethanol a good thing? I'll tell you what. The only reason people don't realize how crappy a gas it is because you have a knock sensor in your car that retards your timing. If they took really good gas mileage statements, you'd find out very, very fast that if you run regular fuel, you get better fuel economy. It's easier on your engine, and it has more power. These are all statements that are definitely true.
Yeah, they're debated, Ron, but what about that, Dan Weiss?
Well, let me answer both those questions. And the second question first, you're correct. Regular gasoline provides more power than ethanol, but the cost of buying the ethanol, because it's cheaper, balances out. And so it's about equivalent in price to gasoline. Second, when it comes to the technology, is that there's existing technologies now that you could get used to have an SUV get 35 miles per gallon without impacting power. For example, having direct injection of fuel, dual cam phasing, automated manual transmission, improved efficiency alternator, a low leak air conditioner. All of those technologies would exist today and could make a minivan, for example, get 35 mpg. For a pickup truck, you could have discrete variable valve lift, coupled cam phasing, automated manual transmission. All these technologies would help pickups reach 35 mpg. Now, this isn't based on me just making this up. This was done by some automotive engineers over at the Union of Concerned Scientists, designed what they called the UCS Vanguard minivan or SUV that uses these existing technologies to meet these fuel economy standards. So if you want to read more about this, you can go to unionofconcernedscientists.org and plug in the word Vanguard, and then there's a little chart down there where you can look at which kind of car would use which kind of existing technology to get 35 mpg.
Thanks, Ron, for the call. We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Dan Weiss, Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy at the Center for American Progress, talking with us about the bill that passed in the House of Representatives yesterday, the Energy Bill, which would increase federal automobile fuel efficiency standards to an average of 35 miles per gallon by the year 2020. The bill would do other things, too, as well as repeal billions of dollars in tax breaks for oil companies and shift the revenue to promote the use of renewable fuels. The Senate takes this bill up today. A filibuster is threatened, and a presidential veto is also threatened. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions about this energy bill. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Friday, December the 7th. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says a bill that cleared the House yesterday will send energy dollars to the Midwest, not the Middle East. The legislation focuses on renewable energy and would provide the first increase in federal automobile fuel efficiency requirements in 3 decades. It faces a filibuster in the Senate and a veto threat from the White House. The Senate takes this energy bill up this morning. We're talking about it this hour with a guest who says this is a good step in the right direction, Daniel Weiss, Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy at the Center for American Progress. He'll answer your questions and respond to your views on this energy bill at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Back to the phones we go. Richard in Nina is with us now. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi. I have more of a comment than a question. Mm-hmm. One of the earlier callers was concerned about a performance or power in the car. And I guess what concerns me about that is, given the severity of our energy crisis and the fact that we're importing oil and that hurts our economy so badly and the environment is in such bad shape with more and more carbon dioxide being pumped into it. Frankly, I think the guy who's towing a trailer or a boat up a hill and couldn't go 75 miles an hour and could only go up the hill at 65 miles an hour, I don't see that as a big sacrifice.
Yeah.
So I'm all for this energy bill, and I hope it succeeds.
Thank you very much, Richard. You don't feel sorry for that guy either, Dan Weiss?
I believe that he's mistaken in that better fuel economy is equated with a loss of power in cars. In fact, if people are interested, you can go to the unionofconcernedscientists.org and put in the word Vanguard, and there'll be a whole bunch of information about how existing cars could meet the 35 miles per gallon standard today without any sacrifice in power or handling or size. And that it's not that we can't do it, it is that we've chosen not to. The previous caller is right. We are wasting a lot of our consumer dollars are going to countries that don't necessarily like or believe in what we stand for to buy oil from them. And in fact, the 35 mile per gallon standard in 2020 will reduce our consumption of oil by over a million barrels a day, which is equivalent to about what we import every day from Nigeria. And that if we had the standard in effect today, we would be backing out enough oil so we wouldn't have to buy any oil from Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, or Venezuela. That's if the standard were already in effect today.
Yeah. Chris in Milwaukee sent an email saying that the increase in average fuel economy sounds great, but I'm concerned and confused by what this means exactly. In other words, how is average fuel economy calculated? Is it an average imposed on each individual manufacturer by vehicle type? Would SUV-type cars be exempted, etc.?
The way it works is that it's called corporate average fuel economy. Each company's fleet must average out to 35 miles per gallon. If they fail to do so, then they have to pay a certain amount of money for each car. One of the things that's included in this bill, by the way, is money to help them retool. And the auto companies retool so that they can do so without bearing all the costs themselves. Another thing that we could do to help American automakers, which this bill does not address, is that right now, American auto companies cost them about $1,000 a car for the health care for their workers and retirees. And that if we had some system that guaranteed health insurance for everybody, that would remove a huge burden off of auto manufacturers.
Next we go to Jesse and Sullivan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a few questions and our comments and concerns. I had read that it would take up to a gallon of regular gasoline to produce 1.2 gallons of ethanol. I suppose that'd be with the farming equipment and that. And that, you know, our soil around the Midwest here is really not set up for growing corn. So the corn erodes the soil, all the pesticides and herbicides are pumping into there. I guess I've heard of alternatives such as prairie grass and algae that can also produce ethanol, but at a much more efficient rate.
Right, that's the new generation of ethanol that you were talking about in the first half hour, Dan Weiss?
No, I wasn't on for that. I guess my main concern about the corn ethanol is the government subsidies and how that is going to have a negative effect on these alternative sources when the government gets involved. I think the private sector would would have a much better shot at finding an alternative to ethanol than corn if the government would let the private market decide.
Yeah, all right.
The caller is right in that corn ethanol is not the most efficient kind of ethanol that we can make. We think of it as a transition fuel between oil, which is what we use today, and the next generation of ethanol, like the caller was talking about, using prairie grass, switchgrass, agricultural waste. One of the things that's in this new bill is that the ethanol that's going to be produced under the bill is going to have to be done in a more sustainable fashion to minimize the amount of water pollution and other pollution problems caused by its production. And really what we're trying to do is shift from corn to these other cleaner forms of ethanol. It is important to note that corn ethanol, even when adjusted for its lower octane, produces less global warming pollution than producing and burning gasoline. So in that sense, aside from not using oil, it also is less of a global warming pollutant.
Yeah, but the corn ethanol is Jesse right that this that it takes whatever a gallon of gas to produce a gallon of ethanol?
No, I don't believe that's correct. But it does take a lot of energy to produce corn ethanol, a little bit less than what it takes to produce gasoline from oil. So it's a little bit of an energy savings. But it's important to remember that it reduces the amount of oil we use and that the energy used to produce it is electricity. And what we ought to do is, if we can increase our renewable electricity, we can use the wind and solar power to then convert agricultural products like switchgrass and prairie grass and convert them into fuel. So that's a huge net plus for us from where we are today.
Yeah. And Jesse, did you have some other question?
No, that was all. I'll hang up now. Thank you for
Thanks
your time.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling. Try Bill and Stanley now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I agree with a lot of the things that need to be done. Corporate average fuel economy, it has gone up since the 80s. Now, E85 in Wisconsin, it's recommended that you don't use it in cold weather because of starting situations. You're going to get about two-thirds the mileage with E85 as you are regular gasoline.
Hold on a second. Just because I want to make sure we can address these before our break. Do you know anything about that? Less mileage in cold weather for E85, Dan Weiss?
I had not heard that, but it's interesting because the most numbers of stations that sell E85 are in Minnesota, and that's, as you know, a cold state. When it comes to the mileage standards, if you look at the Energy Information Administration's website, it shows that combined fuel economy for cars and trucks has pretty much been static around 21 or 22 miles per gallon since 1987. Now, the standards have been adjusted a little bit for cars and light trucks, but that hasn't really made a difference, and that the what the bill does is it's the first legislative increase since 1975.
Bill?
Okay. The other thing that I would love to see him address is I am not saying get rid of the roadway system, but the Chicago tollway system wastes a half million gallons of fuel per day collecting their tax monies. Now, that's enough. In one day, they waste enough money to heat 500 homes for a year.
That the toll system is not addressed in this bill, I take it, Dan Weiss?
No, it isn't, and that, I believe, is a state decision. But one way to reduce the energy losses from that is to get everybody on a flash pass system where you just have to drive through rather than having to throw your coins into the toll booth.
We are talking with Dan Weiss, Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy at the Center for American Progress, about the energy bill that passed in the House of Representatives yesterday and will be taken up by the Senate today, talking about what's in this bill and what Dan Weiss likes about it. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. It includes the first increase in federal automobile fuel efficiency requirements in 3 decades. It would require an average of 35 miles per gallon by the year 2020 for our vehicles. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we'll talk with a guest about religion and politics following presidential candidate Mitt Romney's faith address yesterday and Mike Huckabee's rise in the polls. That's coming up after 7. And then it's our week in review after 8. Right now, we're talking about the energy bill that passed in the House yesterday and is taken up by the Senate today. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Dan Weiss, Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Change at the Center for American Progress. The Center for American Progress says this energy bill would save consumers $22 billion annually in lower fuel costs. And Dan Weiss, what about reduction in global warming pollution?
That's one of the great benefits of this bill. This bill, taken all together, would reduce global warming pollution by a little bit less than 20% by 2030 compared to doing business as usual. And so this will also be a down payment on our efforts that we need to do to reduce the threat of global warming. It's not sufficient, but it is a very, very important step in that regard.
Doug in Green Bay is with us now. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to have you clarify a little more on what you mean by the fleet. Whose fleet are you talking about when you say the fleet has to increase its mileage, for one thing? But secondly, I don't think we need to force our car makers to change what they're doing, because they all give us plenty of options. If you want small, efficient mileage, you can buy it. If you want the big gas hog, you can buy it. We have the option. We are the public, and we can buy what we want. Why are we forcing them to change the way they're doing their things?
Yeah. Well, what about that, Dan Weiss?
Well, here's what it means by fleet. Each auto company, say Ford, for example, has a fleet of cars. They sell Mercurys. They sell they sell Mercurys. They sell Lincolns. They sell Ford trucks. When you take all of the cars that they sell together, have to average 35 miles per gallon. That means they can have some trucks that may get only 25 miles a gallon, but then for every one of those, they would have to sell a car that gets 45 miles per gallon.
So Doug can still have his gas hog, and I can have some fuel-efficient.
That's right. The problem isn't that the technology doesn't exist. It does. The problem is that the few auto companies have refused to use it. Now, they're starting to do this a little bit with some of their cars, but by and large, like I said earlier, the average fuel economy of cars has not increased since the mid-80s, cars and light trucks combined. The problem has been that back then, about one quarter of our fleet, the nation's fleet, was light trucks, which are minivans, SUVs, and light pickup trucks. Now it's about half of our fleet. So that's why fuel economies remain stagnant. Even though smaller cars get better mileage than they did 20 years ago, you have many, many more light trucks that get poor fuel economy. And then some people don't have a choice. For example, I have three kids. I need to have a minivan to take the kids around. That gets 17 miles per gallon. That's the best that it can do. Even though there's existing technology that could make this minivan go much further on a gallon of gas. And not that I want to bring my own situation into it, but both my father-in-law and brother-in-law are car dealers. So my family is one that has been very involved in the car business for years, and yet they see this as a good thing in helping their business.
Well, help me understand why, if there's existing technology and it's not really all that much money to have it there, why the vans can't have more than 17 miles per gallon right now.
That's because the auto companies don't want to put the technology on because it increases the price of the vehicle and cuts into their profits.
Yeah, so that's why we need legislation to force this.
Absolutely. We've been talking about this now for 20 years. The last time we came close to passing strengthen fuel economy standards was in 1990, right after Iraq invaded Kuwait, and gasoline shot up to what seemed like the ridiculous price of $1.50 a gallon. You know, now gasoline is north of $3 a gallon. Oil has been hovering around $90 a barrel, and yet we're still using, in effect, the same technology we were 17 years ago.
Yeah, so does that make more sense, Doug?
Not really. I'm still thinking the public has a choice, and if you want to tow three kids around, which I do, you can buy a Prius and get 60 miles per gallon. You don't have to have a minivan. Secondly, I don't appreciate being labeled that I want a gas hog.
Oh, I was just teasing.
I don't have a gas hog, and I don't drive one. But my brother-in-law has one, but he only drives 2 miles to work every day. That's great for him. I'm jealous of him that he can have his gas hog, and he probably pays less in gas per year than I do, but he's got the option to buy the gas hog, too. So,
yeah, well, if he's only lives 2 miles from work, he ought to be walking or riding his bike.
Well, anyway, he has the choice, I suppose, to do that. But Dan Weiss, what about, he just brought up that you have the choice to get your, whatever, 60-mile-per-hour or gallon Prius, and whether or not you want to argue whether your three kids would fit in there or not. What about those types of vehicles, like the hybrids?
There's money in this bill. Some of the money from closing the tax loopholes for big oil, and those companies have made $500 billion in the last 6 years because of high oil prices. Some of that money would go to tax benefits for people who buy the next generation of hybrids, which are called plug-in hybrids, where your hybrid battery is recharged overnight, and those cars get something like 100-plus miles per gallon of gasoline. The technology has not yet been commercialized, but it'll be here within 5 years. And so there's benefits in the bill for people like that. Going back to the caller's point about size of car, we have a minivan because we have three kids, and we often have extra kids besides my own being driven around. And I think it's great that he can take his kids around in a Prius, but for our family, that just wouldn't be practical. We ought to be able to buy a minivan that gets 35 miles a gallon with, you know, things like direct injection, dual cam phasing. You can turbocharge the engine, automated manual transmission. All of these and other technologies that exist today could be put on a minivan, and you would get 35 miles per gallon.
Doug, thanks very much for the call. And again, I was just using you as an example in that question. Mike in Madison, hi.
Hi. It's good to see that Congress is finally taking the action to increase fuel efficiencies of vehicles, and I support that. My concern is that the bill does nothing to encourage people to drive less, and in fact, people may end up driving more, which will be even worse for the environment because of traffic congestion, air pollution, and everything else.
Yeah, so Mike, how is it supposed to encourage people to drive less?
There is actually...
Go ahead. Dan Weiss, is there something in here?
There are provisions in there, actually, that would provide tax credits for people like me who bike to work. And so that would provide an incentive to get out of your car and get on your bike. In addition, I believe there are provisions in there that would help improve planning to reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled.
How's that sound, Mike?
I'd like to hear more about that.
Do you have any more to tell us about that, Dan Weiss?
I would have to go look at the bill right now, and I don't know all the details, but you can go to the Speaker Pelosi's website, speaker.gov, and they have all the details of the bill listed.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Carolyn in Door County, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I drive a 1995 Geo. I get 50 miles to the gallon. I love the car. I would buy another one, except for the fact that they no longer make them. Great fuel economy. Now what?
The caller makes a great point, which is that the American auto companies who make the Geo, I believe it's a GM car, correct, have shifted their production away from making smaller fuel-efficient cars to making larger gas guzzlers. And the reason why is they make more money per car when they sell a gas guzzler than when they sell a smaller car.
Yeah.
And so what this would do is this would allow them to continue to build their big cars, but make them get 35 miles per gallon. And if folks want to read more about this, there's two places to go. You can go to AmericanProgress.org, that's our website, or to read about how existing cars could meet 35-mile-per-gallon standard using existing technology. Go to UnionofConcernedScientists.org and plug in the word Vanguard into the search engine, and they'll bring up all kinds of information. They have a little thing there where you can click on and see in a minivan, here's the technology that exists today that would help a minivan get 35 mpg.
Mike and Oshkosh, almost out of time, but I want to give you the last call.
Okay, I've been to Europe four times in the last 2 years. They have tremendous public transportation, but I have rented cars a few times, and they have little cars over there that'll get 35, 40 miles per gallon or more, and they'll do 100 miles an hour or 160 kilometers per hour on the Autobahn. So there's absolutely no reason. The lady that wants a Geo, they're still made by Suzuki.
Okay. Dan Weiss, in the last minute, you want to talk about what the Senate might do this morning?
Well, there's going to be a big vote in the Senate on whether or not to take up the House bill that has all these great provisions in it. It's going to be very close. The Senate needs a supermajority to get anything done, so they need 60 votes. A majority won't be enough, and it's going to be close. Fortunately, I believe Senators Feingold and Cole are going to be voting to take up the bill, but if folks want to call them to encourage them to do that, that wouldn't hurt. And the way to do that is you call them at 202-224-3121 and ask for Senator Cole or Senator Feingold, and they'll connect you with the office.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Daniel Weiss, Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy at the Center for American Progress. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.